So, yes, Thanksgiving Day is just hours away now, a chance for Americans, regardless of political affiliation or religion, to gather together and share regrets about eating too much. We're pretty uniform in that. Thanksgiving is celebrated with a meal just about everywhere. So let's talk about meals, turkey and more, with a couple of people who enjoy cooking and who write about food. Todd Davies is the creator of Exterminating Angel Press, based in the Ashland area. She wrote two books, Jam Today, A Diary of Cooking with What You've Got, and Jam Today 2, The Revolution Will Not Be Catered. Good to have you here again, Todd.
Nice to see you, Jeff.
And Sarah Lemon is with us. She's a food blogger and podcaster for the Mail Tribune. Her segments go by the name The Whole Dish. Good to see you, Sarah.
Thank you.
So what kinds of food do you tend to write about? Let's start with each of you individually.
Oh, Jeff, that's such a soft... Well, I mean, garlic, obviously.
Uh-huh,
but
garlic.
No, I think Sarah... I'll let Sarah speak to this one, but I think because I think she and I have a ton in common about what kind of food we like to cook and like to eat, obviously. Mm-hmm. Over to you, Sarah.
Well, Todd and I famously cook without recipes, hence the subtitle of Todd's first book. And what that means for me, really for the past decade in particular, is cooking with what's seasonal, because I have a garden, so it's right there in front of you. You know it's fresh and you know it's in season. And we've managed to adapt some of our Thanksgiving recipes a little bit to that over the years. Rather than trying to do fresh green beans in November, you know, we've gone more toward
Brussels sprouts on the table.
Well, let's pause there. What is the deal with Brussels sprouts? How come you can find just the little individual ones all through the year, and then along about late September, early October, you get the full trees of Brussels sprouts showing up in the stores?
That's a really good question, Jeff, and I think you're going to have a gardening segment about that.
All right, we need a grocer.
I can tell you what to do with it.
Okay,
both of those kinds of Brussels sprouts are really good when you roast them or you stir fry them, and then put balsamic vinegar on them for the last minute.
Ooh, it does sound good. I do the braising thing where you cut them in half and braise them in some oil and cumin.
Cumin?
Yeah.
And that's a good idea.
Add liquid then basil, sweet basil, too.
Seriously?
To finish them off. Yeah, it takes about 20 minutes, but you get the degree of tenderness you like without turning them into total mush.
See, I really like when they get really crispy, too, so I like that cutting them in half thing. Right. How'd we get on this Brussels sprout thing?
I don't know, but we're out of great tear here.
Well, let me add something to what Sarah said. I live a half an hour away from a store, and I live in the mountains, so frequently around this period, it snows. Mm-hmm. So I have to cook with whatever I've got in the house. And so an awful lot of my cooking is like that. So what I cook with is I like to cook seasonal as well as Sarah, because not just because it's less expensive than cooking out of season, but because it's always more delicious and more nutritious. And also, I love to cook local. But frequently it has happened to me that it's a holiday coming up and I don't have anything. I can't get to the store and I have to look at what I have in the cupboard. So some people may have that issue, too, this year.
So when you shop, you have to shop pretty well, I'm thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's one thing.
I love shopping.
But the other one is anybody who's going to cook without recipes has to have a fair amount of confidence in the kitchen first. So
yeah, and also you have to have read a lot of recipes, too. I mean, it's a little misleading to say cook without recipes, but you can, but I wouldn't do it until you feel like doing it, really.
You kind of memorized a few of them, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Enough years,
you know, you sort of know how to do it.
Well, and it's about techniques. I mean, once you've cooked long enough, you just know what the techniques are, what the methods are, and you know what flavors go together.
That's right. That's really important.
And where you can step outside the box and, you know, put together flavors maybe other people wouldn't necessarily think of. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like your signature style.
So how adventuresome do either of you get in that realm? Sarah, have you put some things in dishes together that you thought I would never, ever do this?
Well, I mean, on the topic of Thanksgiving, I actually hosted a group of friends, about a dozen people, former employees of the Mail Tribune, who would work the night shift on Thanksgiving, and they weren't going to have Thanksgiving otherwise, or, you know, they were single people and didn't have families in the area. So, yeah, I would cook for a group of about a dozen people. And one year I told everyone, so the dinner is going to have sort of an Asian twist to it. Like every dish is going to be kind of sort of inspired by Asian cuisine a little bit. So I did a soy sauce, citrus glazed turkey. I did sesame roasted Brussels sprouts. I did a sweet potato spring roll that was really delicious. So that for me was the most outside the box I had ever gotten. And I was inspired by this recipe for this soy citrus glazed turkey I actually did see, but then made up the rest, the sweet potato spring rolls came out of my head.
So soy sauce and citrus glaze, you had to make this up, and then did you splatter on the turkey before it started cooking or during the process?
Just during. I mean, as it's roasting in the oven, just putting the sauce on and it getting and glazing. And then, of course, all of my pan drippings were flavored with that soy sauce. And if you want to try to make gravy out of that, I realized not only is it really salty, but when I kind of, you know, reduced it down to a sauce and put potato starch in or whatever, I'm like, this tastes exactly like stir-fry sauce from a bad Chinese restaurant. Sorry, everyone. I wasn't really going for that.
This is so American.
That's the flavor you like. There you go.
This is so American, an Asian Thanksgiving. Yeah. It's so. You know what I'm going doing for Thanksgiving this year? I was invited to my neighbors out in rural Oregon, ranchers down the road from me. Every year they cook Thai food.
Really?
Yeah. So they invited me. They've got three generations coming. They're cooking Thai food. And I said, oh, I'd love to come. And they said, well, we invited you because we want your seaweed salad. So and I said, now that is American.
Truly. American cooking here from many countries here on the Jefferson Exchange. Todd Davies wrote Jam Today and Jam Today 2. Sarah Lemon is a food blogger and podcaster for the Mail Tribune in Medford. Join us on the Exchange. Got some questions or some ideas about things you've done that made Thanksgiving a little different? Perhaps a soy sauce citrus glazed turkey? 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I want to come back to what you said about if you're going to make a gravy out of a turkey with all the soy sauce, it's got to be really salty. Do either of you make gravy? This is sort of something it took me like better part of 15 years to finally get comfortable with. Yeah. And I'm curious to know about approaches. I remember reading one of MFK Fisher's books where she talked about the best gravies are completely devoid of flour. And I felt like I'd been yelled at.
Oh, honestly. Mm-hmm. She doesn't usually yell either. I think she was just mildly suggesting that to you. They're wonderful both ways. Mm-hmm. Obviously.
I manage to avoid making the gravy most years because we spend the holiday with my mom. And she is kind of known as the master gravy maker. And I do think she uses a little bit of flour in hers.
Wondra flour.
Yeah. Oh, it's got to be the kind from the shaker.
Because it doesn't lump.
Right.
Oh, it's like
right.
Foolproof.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds almost like cheating.
Yeah. I'm very in favor of cheating. I'm very in favor of cheating if it's going to make something more simple and more delicious.
I do marvel at different approaches, though, because my brother-in-law made the gravy after a holiday meal a bunch of years ago, and he pulled out tools that I would never have used in my gravy. He had a whisk in one hand and a bottle of red wine in the other.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm. I like your brother. That's good.
Sounds delicious.
All right, so we have a question here from Jamie in Medford who wants to know about alternatives to stuffing. He doesn't like stuffing very much, which, sorry, Jamie, we are totally 180 on this one. I could throw away the turkey and keep the stuffing.
Mm-hmm. I'm sort of a non-stuffing person when it comes to a bird. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I have people coming that want stuffing, I usually make it outside of the bird, and I usually stuff a bird, usually a duck, frankly, with like whole apples or lemons that have been stuck with a skewer a few times so they suck up the lemon juice. But you know what's a really good alternative to stuffing, Janie, is sliced potatoes cooked in whole cream that crushed garlic has been added to.
Garlic, always the garlic.
Yeah, uh-huh. Well, that's me.
What about for you, Sarah? Any alternatives to stuffing?
I love stuffing. Todd and I will have to politely disagree on this one. And it's gotten even better the past few years at my family because we've been adding chanterelle mushrooms, just, you know, foraged to this time of year from the coast. And it is so good. I mean, we could make it half sautéed chanterelles and half everything else for my taste. But we also don't put it in the bird. We cook it outside in a pan. I mean, there's kind of some food safe handling, you know, issues with that. You're just supposed to cook a turkey to such a much higher temperature. If the stuffing's inside, it gets dried out. So the more modern school of thought is cook it in a pan on the side, and then it gets that nice crispy top, which I love personally. But if you don't like bread, I would suggest like a nice array of roasted root vegetables, just chopped up and put, you know, potatoes, sweet potatoes, rutabagas, parsnips, turnips. You could do any of those, celery root, diced, all uniform size, and just put out in a pan, drizzled with a little olive oil, salt, pepper, and roasted till they were a little caramelized. And you'd have kind of the same presentation a little bit.
And toss it with some thyme.
Yeah. Yeah. Fresh herbs. Any fresh herbs.
So let's talk about freshness of herbs. I know we talked to a food writer a few years ago here who said, hey, if you can't really smell your spices anymore, it's time to get rid of them.
Oh, yeah, true.
That's true.
I said, do not come to my kitchen because it's kind of scary in that respect.
That little thing of oregano in the back.
Oh, huh? Yeah. When was the last time I used it? Can't remember. Don't recognize the name of the store from which it was bought, that sort of thing. Yeah. You can join our discussion about preparation for Thanksgiving or any dinner for that, any other meal for that matter. We're just talking food fun with Sarah Lemon and Todd Davies, both food writers. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Sarah, take us to your garden just a bit. I'm curious to hear about the kinds of things you grow there and how it has changed the stuff you'll prepare on a given day.
I give my mother-in-law, who lives right next door to me, all the credit because she has been a lifelong gardener. She, after she retired, took the Master Gardener course, and so she became even more into it and expanded the garden into some winter crops as well. And, you know, we have right now out in the garden some leeks, which I've been using. I love as a wintertime vegetable. I tell people I use them in everything. And we have kale right now, those hardy winter greens that I like. As rather than buying lettuce at the grocery store, I can just go pick a few leaves of kale. But because they tend to be really tough for a lot of people's tastes, I like to chop them into fine kind of ribbons and then sprinkle them with salt and squeeze the lemon juice and kind of crunch them up in your fingers. And that's what a lot of people have called the massaged kale salad technique. And my family really enjoys that. And I do too for just a heartier winter salad and add some cranberries and some toasted nuts. And it's very, I think, festive if you're going to have a salad for Thanksgiving.
So for the people who might be mildly afraid of kale, and I'm honestly not sure many public radio listeners are, but
kale is your friend.
It is, but there are certain ways to cook it that result in more flavorful preparations than others. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are some of the real basics here, Todd, about not messing up kale?
Oh, you can't mess up kale. But really, I was just thinking when Sarah was saying cranberries, I was thinking anchovies.
What? Right. Cranberries and anchovies?
Anchovies. No. Throw the cranberries into the cranberry sauce.
Uh-huh, okay.
And cook the kale with anchovies and lemon. And garlic, sorry. Uh-huh. Braise it in olive oil.
Don't get me wrong. I love garlic. I would cook with garlic at every meal. Yes.
I can tell.
So anchovies and kale and some garlic. And did you say lemon too?
Yeah, and lemon and capers if you have some. I mean, that's a really, really hearty, strong dish. So you don't want to have anything mild on the side because it will entirely overcome it.
I noticed there was another interview I read with you, Todd, about preparing a certain kind of pretty easy soup that involves kale.
Oh, potato and kale soup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, and it's fabulous for the next day, actually. If you've boiled the kale, you can also... Oh, let's see. I mean, anyway, potatoes, water, sliced potatoes, a big like quarter cup of olive oil, an onion sliced, a garlic clove sliced, and boil it. Boil it so that the olive oil and the water mix, which is what boiling does. Mm-hmm. It won't stay on the top. And then when the potatoes, the onions, and the garlic have cooked down to a mush, and you can crush them, you know, and mush them however much you want, thinly sliced, as Sarah says, kale added at the last minute. It's fabulous immediately. It's fabulous the next day. It's really, really easy. And it's really refreshing and comforting the day after Thanksgiving, I think.
I'm glad you said a quarter cup because I noticed in that recipe it was like a good blup of olive oil or something.
No,
some onomatopoetic term like that.
I know. People are always going, what is blop? What does a glop mean? I mean, I'm like, well, just hold the thing over there and just wait till
the glug.
You know, that's how I cook. She's the professional, okay? I'm the amateur.
Professional. So let's talk about the experiences. I mean, where'd you learn? I mean, it sounds like both of you have really fond memories of being around your mother in your kitchens growing up. But did it turn to professional things later on?
No. My mother was a mother of the 50s with five children,
and TV
she
dinners?
Loathed cooking. She absolutely hated it because she had to do it. That really taught me something. You never, ever, ever want to force people to do things because she loves cooking now, and she's a wonderful cook now. But when I was growing up, it was a horror for her. But my father loved to cook. Everything festive was his job. And I sort of got started with him.
And Sarah, your memories?
Well, my memories are very firmly grounded in my mom's cooking for sure. And she's going to do the Thanksgiving feast for us again this year. We're going to help my sister and and we will help her. But she worked full time. She managed a restaurant. She worked in food service, but she still came home and cooked a dinner from scratch every night, pretty much. I mean, she used a few convenience items that were popular in the 70s, but she had me, I tell people, she had me slicing olives when I was five, maybe, with a paring knife, grating cheese, doing little things like that. And so that's definitely where I got my start.
That's kind of amazing to me that she'd be willing to work that hard at a restaurant and then come home and cook a meal at home, too.
That's just the way she was. And, you know, I think she did it because for her, food is very much about comfort. Mm-hmm. And she wanted our family to always have to feel like we were well fed. And we were.
And it's really fun.
It is.
It's really fun feeding your loved ones, mm-hmm, and feeding yourself.
Food for nutrition and for love. We're talking with Sarah Lemon and Todd Davies on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yes, if you want to make gravy without lumps, the easiest way I've ever seen to do it is you put liquid in a jar, like a mason jar, whatever size you need. Then you add in flour, cornstarch, or potato starch, depending on what you want. And then you shake it until you've shaken it to death, pour it into the hot pan with the pan drippings, and da-da, you have gravy.
Yay!
Oh,
I have seen.
That sounds terrible, but it works.
No, I love that. I love that little, that shaking it to death thing. Yeah. That's the kind of instruction I like when I read it in a recipe.
I have tried the shaker technique. I think the problem was I didn't use Wondra, so that my flour got all clumpy just in there with the water.
Well, then you just use a whisk.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's the thing. That's the other thing about cooking that I think Sarah and I really have in common is we really want everybody to feel comfortable about it because there's really nothing you can do wrong. And if you do something wrong, then you probably have turned it into something else, and that might be good too.
And if you have a few lumps in the gravy, can you just like skim them out? No one's going to notice.
No one's going to notice.
Yeah.
Feed them to the dog.
So from what you were just talking about, you know, even if you make a mistake, it could be the right thing. People fear cooking to some degree.
They do. It's terrible. I mean, and actually, that's one of the reasons why I'm interested in food and interested in writing about it, because it's actually a societal thing, which is we get taught that experts are the only ones who know how to do things which are perfectly within, not just within our capacity, but which are our heritage. I mean, I felt the same way when I was teaching English. I would have students who thought that grammar was actually made up by little white men hanging out in caves in Montana, and that if they did it wrong, something was going to go wrong. And I would say, you know, this is the way you talk. This is your language. And it's the same with food. This is your food. It's your kitchen. It's what you want. It's what you bought. It's what your family likes. Do it that way. Don't listen to Martha Stewart.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Sarah.
That actually is a question on here, because neither of you are really Martha Stewart kinds of cookers. This is really about having a meal together with other people and less about making a show of how good you are.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's the key, isn't it, for Thanksgiving, Sarah? Is that you don't want to be in tears at the end of your cooking experience.
No, of course not. And there's always going to be little hiccups. Something is going to go wrong. But does anybody remember that? No, not. I mean, and I was thinking about this topic, you know, memorable Thanksgivings, when I was recording a podcast a few days ago, and said, you know, the food is a constant. I mean, it's the backdrop for the people in my life. And, you know, maybe there'll be a few little tweaks every few years that might stand out in your mind. But it's really, yeah, about who's the faces around the holiday table.
And please, everyone needs to remember that. It's about the faces around the holiday table. It's about loving everybody, and about being glad that you're together, and about being grateful that you're all together. So no fights, okay?
Well, which brings up, I'm going to range a little farther afield from just the food discussion, though. I mean, when you hear things like, what was the recent NPR poll? Something like more than 45% of Americans are afraid to talk about politics at Thanksgiving this year. More than were afraid a year ago. And I just wonder what you folks, as people who clearly love to have gatherings of people over food, think about that. Sarah?
That, you know, in my family, we are bringing together two pretty different political views. My mother-in-law, the gardener, is actually going to join my parents at their home for Thanksgiving this year, which we have also done in the past. She doesn't have extended family, and so there's always an open invitation for her, and she some years does join us, and it's lovely. But one of the things we pretty much agree on is nobody talks. It's just like an unspoken rule. Like, nobody talks about politics. And since I've had children, I have a 4-year-old son and a 2-year-old son, now they can kind of be the focus, and everyone can come together over that rather than any sort of, you know, political discussions.
And in my family, we have the wide range of politics as well. And I'm happy to say that in my family, family trumps everything. Oh, wrong verb. Mm-hmm. Family, family rules. Family rules. That's much more important than how you feel about the issues of the day. And the other thing is, in my family, we were originally from San Francisco. So all we ever talk about is food at the meal.
Right. So how early do either of you get up on Thanksgiving to do the cooking? I remember all the people over the years, like, oh, my mom had to get out of bed before dawn to put the turkey in the oven. But that's because you're eating at noon. So let's talk about other options. When do you guys tend to start your daily work?
2
p.m.?
Well, you know, like about 4, probably, mm-hmm. with a glass of wine. I mean, really, if you're getting up at 2 in the morning to cook your Thanksgiving dinner, unless you are the kind of person who likes to get up at 2 in the morning to cook your Thanksgiving dinner, you are doing the wrong thing, okay? Are you hearing me out there? Thank you. This is supposed to be a pleasant day. It's supposed to be a lovely day. It's not supposed to be a day where the main person who's cooking is a frazzled wreck.
Mm-hmm. Truly.
I certainly have seen the very early rising on Thanksgiving, for sure. My mom famously has done that. But it wasn't such a stretch for her, Todd, because she would get up at 5 in the morning a lot of mornings to go to a restaurant that opened for breakfast. So, you hear things clattering around in the kitchen at 4. You're like, oh, must be time for Thanksgiving dinner in 12 hours.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing thoughts about preparing Thanksgiving meals, and any meals for that matter. Todd Davies wrote Jam Today and Jam Today 2. Sarah Lemon is a food blogger and podcaster for the Mail Tribune. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for joining us, you two.